I'd like to switch topics here before we get back to the panhandling thing.
Right.
Tell us about Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. What is the show about, and what's the focus of the show?
Well, that's a twice-weekly radio show that I do that you have taken over while I've been gone. And I guess with the able help of Mike Balderas and perhaps Pat Ring and others, I'm concerned with the same things that we're talking about now, issues of civil rights, sometimes issues of police abuse, sometimes issues of the drug war. It's sort of a series of pet interests I have. And the Broadsides, of course, is a, it used to be a pamphlet or flyer. That's what a Broadsides was called. Also, you would fire a ship broadside if you wanted to do maximum fire damage. Uh-huh. When you turn your ship broadside, all the guns could fire, whereas if you had the bow pointing at the ship, only the guns at the front could fire. Also, broadsides, you could do more damage, you would receive more damage, so it was both risky, because you would, both your ship would be more vulnerable, and yet it could have more firepower at the same time. So, Bathrobes Pier has to do with the name that I was given by attorney Grinning Ray Grunike back in 1988 for... because I wore a bathrobe to demonstrations. In fact, I wore a bathrobe to this jail cell when I came here. Didn't quite make it to the jail cell. I made it to the holding area with a bathrobe on and a teddy bear.
Mm-hmm. All right. Robert.
Yes.
Your incarceration for serving bagels and soup to homeless people has been described as ridiculous, a waste of time and money. Who other than Judge Robert Barkley believes you deserve this punishment for this so-called crime?
Well, I think that it's not who thinks I deserve it. I think, for instance, that Neil Coonerty, certainly at Santa Cruz, Bookshop Santa Cruz owner, who wrote to Judge Barkley a letter, which Judge Barkley read aloud in court. After he didn't read aloud, he gave it to both of us, the district attorney and my defense counsel and myself, to read. He certainly thinks I deserve even more time in jail. It isn't even a question of what I deserve. The reason I think I'm in jail is to uphold the ongoing war against food and bombs and the poor. Even though Mayor Brown and District Attorney Hallinan of San Francisco had supposedly backed off on this, they haven't really backed off, because if they had, I wouldn't be here. I mean, if they really wanted to make sure that this didn't happen, they would, for instance, prevail upon the judge who could have heard this case, Judge Tang, on May 3rd, to hear the case and to reduce the sentence. I'm not saying they control the judge, but San Francisco judges would have a much harder time if they could impose this kind of a sentence, given the change of policy in the district attorney's office, than this out-of-town judge. They can write it off as a fluke. But in fact, it does send a message to Food Not Bombs people, which is, you get to go to jail if you serve free food. If we want, we can take it all the way through and do this. So the message is, we have not stopped our war against the poor. You will play ball with us, or you will face, to some extent, the iron fist behind the velvet glove. And this talk about a new dawn and so forth is for the liberal consumption. It's also, they're trying to play both sides of the street. I mean, you know, they are actually putting more police on the beat, and there are more arrests under the Matrix program than a year ago. At least there were a month or two ago.
But public opinion seems to be predominantly amazed that you're serving time for this.
Now, public opinion is primarily indifferent and apathetic and really ignorant as to the issue. For the first time in history, Food Not Bombs actually got some coverage in San Francisco. Actually, they did back in '88 too, and they have occasionally. But this is the first time that the food trial was actually covered to any extent. It wasn't covered during the trial. I got virtually no coverage at all when this case was tried. I got a little teeny, brief thing during the actual trial in 1994. So that, whereas now in 1996, there's actually been stories in the Examiner, stories in the Chronicle, one story, I should say, in each. And so that is an improvement, but generally, nothing. And indeed, Amnesty International's literary campaign has produced no letters to me. I've gotten one letter from Canada because somebody noticed something on the internet. People are not really that interested in this issue. People, maybe, they're preoccupied with their own lives, their own jobs, I'm guessing, keeping it together with their own families, you know, fighting to do what they need to survive, and they don't understand or feel the time to kind of help with other causes or see how that relates. That's the problem.
Now, Food Not Bombs has had a number of brushes with the law. Why doesn't Food Not Bombs just act like Mother Teresa and quit serving poor people out in the open and visible to all?
Because Food Not Bombs' mission, if you will, is to bring to public awareness the fact that the poor people are treated as criminals in public places, and to fight that mode of treatment that people are suffering. That's the reason that Food Not Bombs serves for food every day. It's also much easier for people to eat food where they are, rather than have to gather in some dark, dismal place somewhere and eat inside. It's frequently much more congenial, it's much freer, and they're also, Food Not Bombs is concerned about food, not bombs, emphasizing those priorities and showing the public that that is what we really need to do, and that it's really a graphic First Amendment display, because not only are they giving out literature saying food, not bombs, but here's a whole bunch of people who are hungry, who need to be fed, who the city is obviously not providing adequate services for, who come every day to get this extremely meager meal of bagels and salad, or bagels and rice, or oatmeal, as is being served in front of the Hall of Justice. So, that's the reason.
But part of the reason is that Food Not Bombs wants to have the literature available to the general public, kind of out, you know, in a more public place. So, is this part of a public education?
Yeah, literature and just the demonstration of this actually happening.
So if you're way off the beaten track, that...
it's not a charity service to poor people to serve them food. It's an attempt to show that society needs to change its priorities and to involve homeless and poor people and the middle-class community in changing the situation through political agitation, through demonstrations, through starting feeding operations of their own, through vegetarianism, which is a key tenet of Food Not Bombs, because meat use and consumption.
Because of an ecological point of view?
That too. You know, I mean, the third world supplies beef, and in so doing, it takes 30 times the amount of food to, you know, allow one cow to get to some rich guy's plate in New York City as it would to feed the people that they really need to be fed in that third world country.
So do you know of other cases in which serving free food was illegal?
Sure, although we've had some victories this week. Whittier has dropped its charges against Food Not Bombs volunteers. Arcata is apparently putting such charges on hold, fearing that there'll be a Food Not Bombs majority at the next November election. Nonetheless, there have been numerous cases of people being arrested for serving free food. Well, there have been thousands of cases of people being arrested, but there have been very few people actually being convicted that I've heard of. There were two convictions in Santa Cruz that I continually refer to, and people who follow this show probably have heard this before. There's a woman named Sandra Loringer, and there's a man named Brian Flanagan Staley. Brian Staley was call him Backyard Brian. They called Sandy Sly Shoes Sandy because she would sneak in food to homeless people at the town clock when the mayor Wormhout had declared it illegal, and the county, her police were arresting under so-called county health regulations, state health regulations, which were nothing more than a guise to pamper the downtown association's paranoia about people being fed at the town clock, which is right at the entrance to this Santa Cruz urban area. Those two people, Brian Staley and Sandy Loringer, were convicted of serving free food. They had jury trials. They were convicted by Santa Cruz juries in 1989. They both eventually served about 20, 25 days each jail, but you're dealing with the champion here, Mr. Big Guy. I'm serving 59 days, which has been reduced, I guess, to about 40 days.
40 days and nights.
40 days.
How biblical.
40 nights, right? There isn't even a storm outside. It's incredible.
We're waiting the plague of locusts any minute.
Indeed. Plague me any time.
So, You stated that the day you get out, you will serve free food again. Is that still true?
Sure. I've never stopped serving free food. Even after I was convicted, I was arrested 9 months later at the same place for serving free food again. Actually, it was across the street. It was at the in front of City Hall. I was giving away bagels, and they grabbed me and took me to jail. And they held me for a few hours, and then they released me and dropped the charge. This was after I'd been convicted and sentenced. It was in October of 1994. So it's a bad habit with me, I'm afraid. You know, once a bagel giver, always a bagel giver. What can I say? It must be my Jewish upbringing, or lack of Jewish upbringing. So, mm-hmm.
So why did you refuse probation?
That was rather obscurely explained by my attorney David Beauvais in court. If you accept probation on a sentence, it means you agree to obey all laws for a period ranging from 1 to 3 years, depends on what the judge says. If you agree to do that, and you are found by a police officer to violate a law, he can have you taken into court, and without a jury trial, simply before a judge, they can revoke your probation. Your probation, which means you will then serve not just the sentence, the 2 month sentence, I'm always a little unclear on this, but I think you can serve up to the maximum of whatever could have been sentenced. So on a misdemeanor, you can serve up to 6 months. So in essence, you can serve time without a trial, without a jury trial, without protection through having a lawyer present, confronting, accusing witnesses, and so forth, just because you've accepted probation. It's sort of like a looser version of parole, which many of these men here will be facing when they get out. Parole means they can search your house, they can search your person, they make you piss into a bottle every week. A whole series of restrictions. You can't leave the county or you can't leave the state. These kinds of restrictions, and they can also restrict you from political activity, restrict your associations, that's under parole. Under probation, restrictions are less, but there's a danger if you're involved in any kind of demonstrations. You can be arrested and essentially summarily jailed for a number of months. So it's not a good thing to accept probation if you intend to get back into the swing of things. That is to say, sleeping out in City Hall.
Wasn't there also the, that if you accept probation, that you basically, it's like admitting you were guilty?
That, in essence, was something I manufactured for the court. It's true. That is one way of saying that. But I said that to the judge because I didn't want to say, I'm going to go out and serve food again.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was trying, in a way, to play both sides of the street. I wanted to give the judge an opportunity.
And you did so expertly.
Well, apparently not. We made a number of mistakes in this trial. Even with David Beauvais, who is a very dedicated lawyer, a somewhat sophisticated lawyer, he's put a lot of hours of work into this case and has gotten very little back. He made a mistake. He should not have asked for community service before the judge.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't realize that because having the judge say no, we missed the opportunity. The sheriff could have immediately given me community service by walking into this jail if the judge had not said no. And in my opinion, the sheriff could still give me community service if he wants, in spite of what the judge says, because they've done that in other jails. But again, the political will is not there mm-hmm. at the moment, and the amount of public pressure can have a major effect on that. So if you find yourself outraged by this case, you know, walk to your nearest phone, or you know, sit down with a pencil and paper, pen and paper, and write a letter to the San Francisco Chronicle, the San Francisco Examiner, the Santa Cruz Sentinel, San Jose Mercury News, and say, there's a man in San Francisco jail serving time for serving soup to homeless people. This is preposterous. Release him now. And don't do it for me and for my glory. I mean, people think I'm in this for the glory and the publicity. No, do it because it needs to be done, because there are people being arrested in Santa Cruz for sleeping at night. There are people being arrested in San Francisco for sitting on a park bench with a backpack. And there are people arrested for being in Golden Gate Park because they have no other place to be at night. And the way to send these politicians a message is to create the firestorm of publicity that can be created, because people have consciences. This they do realize is ridiculous. And when they take time out from their lives to think about it, they just shake their heads. I mean, every convict in here I've talked to just looks at you, and I tell them, what are you in here for? Oh, aggravated assault. What are you in here for? Oh, having a gun and, selling crack. What are you in here for? Oh, giving away bagels. It doesn't have the same impact.
It's hard to terrify and intimidate the other prisoners with your
threatened to
crime wave.
Feed again, and no one is terribly excited about it. It doesn't have much impact.
Now, the judge who sentenced you was from Modoc County. Why was an out-of-town judge brought in for both your trial and your sentencing? And is it true he retired after your case?
Well, I'm told by my attorney, David Beauvais, that he did retire after my case. Why was he brought in? I have speculated that already in this interview that it's because local judges face local elections and no one wants to have I sent the soup server to jail on her record when she runs for election here in San Francisco, because people are going to wonder, well, what else did you do?
Right.
Whereas in Modoc County, maybe if we're a local Modoc County person, even the Modoc County voters would be upset. Hard to say. I've never been to Modoc County, and I continue to ask folks interested in this case to research what's going on in Modoc County, but people have a lot of things to do, and so that hasn't really been taken care of. I don't really have a clear reading on that. My theory is that some of the people wanted me to go to jail who were involved in the district attorney's office, involved in the police department, involved in the mayor's office, not necessarily directly responsible to the mayor or to the district attorney, our new district attorney, Terrence Hallinand, and Mayor Willie Brown, but who still have stock positions, and they brought in this out-of-town judge. And the out-of-town judge actually was brought in under Jordan. He was brought in because local judges didn't want the case. Apparently, they didn't want to try a food bomb's case. And the judge came in, and he did the dirty work. And then he left, and then he retired. So, it's all very neatly done. And in essence, they're saying, as I said before, we can do whatever the fuck we want. We can pull in the judges that'll convict you. You can appeal all you want, all day and all night. You'll still end up in jail if you don't do what we say.
Well, there was some people had speculated that when the judge asked for 3 weeks to consider whether he would reduce your sentence or not, that it wasn't really that he needed the time to think about it as so much as that he had to check with somebody that he was receiving orders from somewhere else. This was a speculation that
speculation, and I don't know. I would like to see.
It would be impossible to prove one way or another.
Well, you could show some kind of communications between people around that issue, and indeed, Food Not Bombs has made discovery motions that have shown connivance and conspiracy or collusion, at the very least, between the health department and the police department in San Francisco, where the health department would run down the Food Not Bombs and say, or the police department would run down and say, you've got a tent up, take that tent down, or we're going to arrest you. Food Not Bombs took the tent down. 2 minutes later, the health department would say, hey, there's no tent here. Here's a health violation. And they actually, it's internal documents showing that the health department had said things like, we have not been able to find any more regulations to force Food Not Bombs to conform to. What should we do now? There are documents that actually have this that are in the file. So you could find similar documents regarding Barclay, presumably, if you kept looking. But at the moment, nobody is looking, so that's a pity.
I'm looking at, I guess this is what you can order from the commissary.
Yes, you're looking at the yellow commissary
list.
Those
licorice red whips.
Yes, that's... It's the only whip. Well, you get a whipping in jail anyway, but this way it's tasty.
Kosher dill pickles, 75 cents.
I made the mistake of getting two of those. That's a boo-boo, I'll tell you. I can't imagine what you would eat them with.
Well, probably from your Jewish ancestry there.
There are no hamburgers in jail, particularly when you're on a vegetarian diet. I was advised to get on a vegetarian diet.
Oh, you can buy playing cards.
I ordered some playing cards, and I've got some playing cards. I intend to gamble my way to heaven.
And reading glasses, bargain at $7.
I need glasses for distance rather than for the local. Actually, that's one thing you can actually sue, I'm told, by inmates. You can do a writ of habeas corpus if you don't have the right glasses. If they don't give you glasses or medical care, they have to release you.
Mm-hmm. Planning.
Planning a writ of habeas corpus? No. Those take, one of the problems is those take many months to do. So in a way, you're kind of screwed if you're in the short term. But you can kick up a little fuss if you're willing. That's what Keith McHenry would always do when he was in jail. Is you kick up a fuss, have people chanting food not bombs in the cells and so forth. Annoy the guards to no end. Sometimes the guards would join the chants.
But your stamped envelopes, the English dictionary is $3, but the Spanish dictionary is $5.
Right, and the English dictionary is really a pathetic dictionary. My housemate, my pod mate, got this dictionary yesterday from the commissary. Thursday is commissary day. For all you folks who want to leave money in my books, do it before Thursday. you send in money orders, everybody. Send your money orders this way. He got the English dictionary. The English dictionary is pathetic. It's a very simplified dictionary. It's much less useful than the dictionary an ordinary college student gets as a paperback. And more expensive. It's actually cheaper to the inmates, but more expensive. The printed price is more expensive. So one has to be critical of numerous aspects of the prison experience here.
Well, you have to live up to your title. The most irritating man in Santa Cruz. Mm. So I imagine being in jail would make you even more irritating.
I'm getting extremely grumpy. In a way, it's good training. It gets me cranky, all ready to come back to Santa Cruz and grumble some more. Although I may not come back to Santa Cruz for a while after I get out of here. I may flee the state for a while to get a different perspective of what's going on. I'm thinking of going north to Portland. Portland is a city where food not bombs, apparently. There was somebody arrested for serving free food, and we're trying to track down that roommate.
So there's maybe you've sparked something here. Hopefully not.
Spark something?
Well, I mean, I think it would be really sad to see a whole bunch of people, it become normal course of business to arrest people for giving away free food.
Oh, yeah, well, this Portland thing actually happened months ago. It's not that. A lot of this happens as a fluke where police are simply expressing their powers. They want people to do something, and the people say no, and so they just arrest them. But the cases don't go anywhere. My case is a very rare exception. So there are two other cases that I know of other than mine. Brian Staley's case, disappeared without a trace. Sandy Loringer's became world famous. She sparked the famous T-shirt, I Am Beyond Rehabilitation.
Yeah. I've come to the end of my prepared question.
Ah, okay.
Did you have any further comments on something you'd like to talk about?
Pressing issues.
Concern.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, they're in Santa Cruz. The City Hall Sleepers Vigil is, I guess, now in its 120th day, something like that. And I hear rumors that the vigil is undergoing a change of personnel or possibly a suspension. I'm not sure. If that's the case, I don't think the people who have done the vigil should in any way feel that they failed. They
have put a bunch of cases into the courts now. And that was one of the concerns that some of the vigilers had said, was that they had made their statement. They'd shown that they were serious about it. It was not a trivial thing. And that getting these cases in the courts is the next focus for challenging these laws.
Well, that would be a nice cover. I don't think that's true. I think the courts are a miserable place to try to challenge anything unless you have real legal support and you're going for an injunction or a lawsuit in another court, like a federal court, that might actually give you, at some level, a fair hearing. So that to me is sort of a face-saving comment. Maybe what I'm saying is a face-saving comment, that, yeah, you did fail. You didn't get the city council to move. You didn't get broad enough support, that perhaps you should learn from your failures the next time, learn from the lessons of the past. It's hard to say, why something isn't successful. I mean, what's really needed, of course, is much more public support from the university, from the other activist communities, from gay people, from other activists in other areas who are truly progressive in Santa Cruz. And that didn't happen, or it hasn't happened yet. I'm not aware that it couldn't happen. It has happened in the past. It has happened in some ways. David Silva is running for city council, and he's concerned with a broad variety of progressive issues, and one of which is the sleeping ban.
Yeah, it's one of his platforms is to end the sleeping ban.
Right. And so it's you know...
I think he's also proposing rent control, which has never occurred in the city of Santa Cruz.
No, although it's been proposed 3 times and been voted down 3 times in the late 70s and early 80s, which Mike Rotkin will faithfully tell you about when explaining why he's never sponsored anything like that, because he doesn't think it's politically possible. A lot of people don't think things are politically possible. There are other approaches, like an initiative could be used to try to modify and reform the sleeping ban. The problem with an initiative is it requires lots of signatures, and it also is very vulnerable to unfavorable media campaigns, of which there would be much unfavorable media. You'd have lots of money pouring in to defeat a change in the Santa Cruz sleeping ban. The merchants would be against it.
What is the crux of this? Why are the merchants so concerned about the sleeping ban? And and to kind of piggyback on top of that, could you also talk about what the situation is in Berkeley with their sleeping ban?
Well, the merchants, it's really a good question. I think that a very profitable survey could be done, profitable in terms of information as to what merchants really think about. Where do they think people should sleep? Do they just expect people to disappear? Do they feel existing services are adequate? When presented with the statistics of 500 to 1,500 homeless in Santa Cruz, they just sort of say, oh, well. Or do they buy Rotkin's argument that everything is fine, people can hide out in proper places if they want? What's the reason that merchants don't favor, are they afraid they'll be blackballed by bigger merchants? That was part of the concern of the downtown ordinances in 1994. And no one really has done that kind of survey. I'd love to see that kind of survey done. Wouldn't be too hard, actually. So we tried to do that in November. Some of the River Street refugees, actually, formerly we called them Save Our Shelter. That group was trying to do that. Dan Hopkins was one of the people involved in that. So we don't really know what the merchant opinion is.
I know when I talked to Stephen DiCenzo.
He's the cartoonist for the Santa Cruz Metro.
Right.
Who writes
and,
the big anti-homeless cartoons.
And, you know, I spoke with him about 2 nights ago, and he was very vigorously homeless bashing. It was kind of a blame the victim rationale, which we hear a lot, that people have made bad personal choices in their life, or they've become drug addicts or alcoholics and hence have become homeless because of that, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. And he said he was really concerned about our town being overrun by homeless people, and that it would take away from the ambiance of Santa Cruz.
You know, maybe that is the place to begin. Maybe what we should do is we should start trumpeting these lies as a sort of a satire, major satire. Just have a large campaign that mocks and satirizes what may be a very sensitive, significant mythology, which is underlying a lot of the intransigence around the sleeping ban. In other words, to have people like DiCenzo, who are quite, you know, are quite the public opinion makers with their cartoons,
mm-hmm.
Mocked, publicly mocked. We should have the same thing that feminists, the same kind of feminist activity that attacked the Miss America contests,
mm-hmm.
that they had a Myth America contest back in the 80s.
And Symington with her Media Watch.
Symington's Media Watch.
And Nikki Craft.
Nikki Craft with her there.
And you're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail. This is your host, Becky Johnson. And what I'm playing for you is an interview that I conducted with Robert Norskon in County Jail 8 in San Francisco, also known as the Glamour Slammer. If you'd like to leave a message for Robert Norskon, call 408-423-4833, also known as the Huff Line, as you can remember, as 423-HUP. Also, you can leave messages for Robert on the Food Not Bombs San Francisco hotline, and that's area code 415-386-9209. Now, please attend a candlelight concert on July 5th at 9 p.m. in support of the City Hall Sleepers Protest. That will be at 809 Center Street, Santa Cruz. So bring a candle, an acoustic instrument, or your voice to the candlelight concert, July 5th. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail, 96.3 FM.
People like DiCenzo, who are quite, you know, are quite the public opinion makers with their cartoons, mocked, publicly mocked. We should have the same thing that feminists, the same kind of feminist activity that attacked the Miss America contests. That they had a Myth America contest back in the 80s.
And Symington with her
Ann
Media
Simonton's
Watch.
Symington's Media Watch.
And Nikki Kraft.
Nikki Kraft with her the quickest way to a man's heart is through his chest.
And then there was that, it was the Cross Your Heart Brigade.
I didn't hear about that.
Oh, but see, Robert, you missed it.
Well, I think these myths have to be attacked.
That was started by Nikki Kraft by accident. She was at the beach boardwalk, the beach, and I guess she's a nudist. And she was sunbathing in the nude on the...
Oh, this was that has to do with the right of men and women to be top-wise nudity.
Right, and so the police officer came up and told her to put her clothes on. And so she put her pants on, and then just kind of in the moment, she said she refused to put her top on unless the officer ordered all the men on the beach to put their tops on.
Very good, very good.
I mean, wasn't planning a protest. She was just down sunbathing, and it felt good. And she thought,
officers,
what the hell, and took her clothes off. Yeah, she was arrested and taken to jail.
Mm-hmm.
And
charges were dropped.
Well, what happened was this created kind of a hue and cry in the feminist community, and they organized a march. And they marched from the county building down Pacific Avenue to the police station, a whole bunch of women marching topless in solidarity. I'm surprised you missed it, Robert.
When was it?
Gosh, 8 or 9 years ago.
It was probably right before my time in Santa Cruz. I've been in and out of Santa Cruz for the last couple of decades.
Let me finish this. They marched up to the police station, and then the police said, well, we can't find any ordinance on our books preventing women from being topless in the city limits of Santa Cruz. And so that's kind of where it was left, it is legal for women to be topless in the city limits of Santa Cruz. And fortunately, has not started a trend in that way, but and it is illegal in Capitola or Scotts Valley, or presumably in the county as
possibly
well.
Even in Berkeley, where they changed the laws on that, that subject.
Yeah, that was a question I sort of put out there earlier about the Berkeley laws.
Oh, right, let me get back to that. But before I do, I just want to say that I think having a survey of merchants and then making a lot of big quotations about what each merchant has said. Yes, homeless people are blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
A series of ridiculous statements and then make that the basis of should there be a boycott. Don't announce a boycott, but start questioning us to put pressure on merchants to re-examine their positions.
You're listening to 96.3 FM Free Radio, Santa Cruz. This is Bathrobes, Pierre's Broadsides from Jail. And I'm going to continue to play the interview that I had with Robert Norse Kahn up in County Jail 8, also known as the Glamour Slammer. This is Becky Johnson, your hostess for this edition of Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides from Jail. Okay, we're with Robert Norris Kahn, prisoner number 1472209.
Oh, you got that memorized.
Got that memorized. Written it down enough times. And we're conducting this interview, County Jail 8. Robert, you were going to tell us some information about what's going on with the sleeping ban law in Berkeley.
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the things Mayor Rodkin has repeatedly told us in different interviews and conversations with me and stuff I've broadcast on Bathrobe's Piers broadsides is that Santa Cruz really, even though the sleeping law is one that bars any act of sleeping after 11 o'clock at night outside of a domicile, with the exception of a church parking lot for three vehicles, or a permitted campground, of which there is essentially only one in Santa Cruz, and it doesn't in any way cover any kind of homeless needs. It's not an open-air shelter for the homeless, as the Coral Street campground was. Even though the Santa Cruz has these onerous anti-homeless laws with respect to sleep, the Santa Cruz is simply following the pack here. That it's true in every other city in California. Either there's a law against sleeping, or camping, as Rodkin likes to describe it, or there is a police practice of brutalizing or deporting homeless people who are caught sleeping in public places. Now, I've never been persuaded this is true. It isn't true, as far as I know. But it's been hard for me to find contrary instances. Well, I was pleased to run into OSHA Newman the other day. Actually, I was making a phone call from my trusty jail cell here in San Francisco. And I ran into OSHA Newman as an attorney who's actually a colleague of my own attorney, David Beauvais, the guy who's dealt with the food case here in San Francisco for me, and who's also helping the City Hall sleep out, who's doing fighting the injunction in Santa Cruz, which makes it illegal for people to be at City Hall and perform necessary human actions, like sleeping there. One act of sleeping is now, of course, up to 6 months in jail. One sign larger than 14 inches is 6 months in jail, potentially, and one act of cooking, preparing, or storing food is up to 6 months in jail under the injunction. I guess there have been, three people arrested and cited under this
mm-hmm.
so far?
That's correct.
So those cases haven't gone to trial, but certainly it's quite a severe response. And in Santa Cruz, and Mayor Rodkin claims this is, it's no anomaly. Santa Cruz is just ordinary, run-of-the-mill city, which it's actually quite liberal. It has these laws to help the homeless people because then they will know what is legal and what is not. Of course, what is legal, what is illegal, is to sleep at any time after 11 o'clock at night. And indeed, police, if the police want to, they can even harass you during the day, claiming that there is an encampment happening, which is Sergeant Crane's way of saying he doesn't like to see you lying down in a reclining position during the day. Sergeant Crane is the bugaboo, a friendly bugaboo, but the bugaboo of the homeless protest in front of City Hall.
Wasn't he voted by the Metro the friendliest police officer?
Yeah, so this should be a special friendliest police officer meets most irritating man in Santa Cruz, and that will have that.
They didn't have an award for the most abusive police officer.
Butchie Baker may have won that one some years back.
Tough fight with Sergeant Clark.
Right, Kicker Clark may have won that one too.
And then Boots Garazio.
Oh yeah, Boots.
Coming
Boots
Garazio. Running, maybe get the bronze for Boots.
The bronze for Boots, the silver for Crane, and probably the gold for Clark. It's hard to tell.
No, Baker.
The Baker. Right, well, Baker is... It's hard. I hate to keep harping on Baker's past, but it's such a flagrant series of abuses, not just by Baker, but by his superiors, by the district attorney's office, by the city council. Here's a man who 10 women reported he sexually abused, and they whitewashed the whole thing. Anyway, let's leave Sergeant Baker. He was promoted after this, I'd like to point out. Alone, and get back to...
You can tell what kind of behavior in Santa Cruz City Police gets rewarded.
Yeah. It's incredible. Let's get back to the issue of Berkeley and the sleeping laws there, because as I said, I contacted his attorney, Ocean Newman, who was previously a police review board member and has really been involved in a lot of homeless litigation in Berkeley, and he informed me that the law in Berkeley does not make it illegal for people to sleep at night on the streets, and moreover, police practice is not to make it illegal to sleep on the streets, although there are periodic sweeps of people. Indeed, even under the anti-homeless law, which was inspired by Santa Cruz's law, Proposition O, which makes it illegal to lie down between 7 in the morning and I think it's 10 at night, 6 feet from a shop in Berkeley, a law currently on hold because it's regarded as unconstitutional by at least the sitting part of it by Federal Judge Claudia Wilken. Even were that law to be found constitutional, it would still be legal for people in Berkeley to sleep at night after 10 o'clock, to lie down even less than 6 feet from a shop, under the awning, protected from the rain, if it rains, of a shop when the shop is closed, on the public space, the public sidewalk, provided they're not blocking the sidewalk, provided they're not pissing on the sidewalk, provided they're not littering or crapping on the sidewalk. So Rotkin is wrong, or Rotkin is intentionally misleading people, because I've asked Osha Newman, I asked him at the beginning of this week, to call Mayor Rotkin and tell him what the real case was in Berkeley, and perhaps then Mayor Rotkin, I had hoped actually to have this done by the city council meeting that just came up, would then be confronted with this. Perhaps at a subsequent city council meeting this will happen, although the city council adjourns throughout August, so city council meeting goers should be aware that there won't be any city council meetings, or the pattern follows itself as it usually does during the August recess, as it's called. So there are other places too where it's legal to sleep. In Palo Alto, there's no law against sleeping. You'll find that out if you talk to a civil rights activist and radio personality, KKUP's Purusha. I'm not sure what Purusha's last name is, but he does a monthly radio show, actually twice weekly radio show, plus a monthly radio show, particularly concerned with homeless rights issues on KKUP. And encourage the listeners to flood you with calls as to how to get in touch with Purusha. I think that one of the keys to the victory in our getting these anti-homeless laws changed is to unite and make contacts between various cities. San Jose Homeless Community Homeless Alliance, for instance, whose phone number for our listeners' interest is 408-354-2353, I believe it is. That you'll get a message line, but you can leave a message. The Community Homeless Alliance has been pursuing affordable housing for homeless people in San Jose for the last 3 or 4 years. And this summer, I believe they plan a series of sleepouts similar to what they did last year. They did a long series of vigils in churches. They moved from place to place with a bunch of homeless people sleeping outside. And of course, what the Santa Cruz vigil and the San Jose vigil and Palo Alto protesters concerned about a new sit-on-the-sidewalk law in Palo Alto and San Francisco people concerned about the continued Matrix program should do is get together.
They should attention to the facility. It is now count time. All inmates, return to your bunk.
Go for it.
This must be why I can't interview between 2 and 3.
We wait till they come in and ask us to be removed. Never ask for permission. Always ask forgiveness is the motto here at the interview. They know where I am. If they want to count me, they can just look through the glass and count me. Frank, the inmate, has suggested that I continue this interview with you, which, of course, is a rare opportunity.
Wow, sounds fun.
It's exciting. Now you can meet many exciting.
Sounds like a jailbreak or something. Some screaming banshees there.
Could be a Kentucky Cajun contest, or a Louisiana Cajun contest.
Maybe it's the top ramen shipment has come in.
It could be. You know, that is one of the most valuable items on the cell block as well. That's certainly the instant lunch, I guess, called a cup of top ramen.
By the way, you don't look like you've gained 5 pounds.
No, I've been hitting the bike pretty rapidly, and also this is my work week, so I have a lot of jobs I have to do, so it keeps me active. I'll probably be putting on the blubber as the weeks go on. We'll see if those who deeply love me still continue to have the same fondness and attraction for me that they always did when I've gained an extra Buddha 40 pounds and appear a true Buddha.
Now, the shoes you're wearing, are those the ones you came in with?
You know, interestingly enough, they are. And usually they don't allow you to bring your shoes into jail, but I have these thongs on, which they said, you keep them. So
how did you get in with those?
They just decided that, I guess they wanted to save money on jail shoes. Maybe that was it, because they usually have to provide you with jail shoes. Mm-hmm. rather than provide me with jail shoes, they left me with the shoes I had on.
So Stephen DiCenzo's cartoon was accurate on at least one point.
I did have my sandals.
Gear.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But Stephen's cartoon, which of course portrays me as being menaced by big cons as I cower against the bars of the teddy bear in the bathrobe, saying, yeah, we'll adopt you as a political prisoner.
Ah, there's a very industrious inmate.
Looking over the jail situation. Right. Looking back at you?
Yeah, I think so.
Watch your step, Kitty.
Yeah, well, you know.
Actually, that's funny. It's good that you could meet some new and exciting people in this jail environment. A female reporter expresses a certain amount of, she's in demand, let's put it that way.
Well, you can have them write me at that P.O. box.
Oh, I get all the prison mail for Becky Johnson.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Becky Johnson, care of Huff.
Let's see. Send your beseeching pornographic letters to video artist Becky Johnson. Actually, we should have Susie Bright come in here and do an interview.
Okay. Contact.
Susie Bright is a porno artist.
Yes, I know who Susie Bright is.
You do, do you?
Yes, I do.
You're way ahead of me.
I don't know about that. Well, actually, I think it would probably be good to contact other journalists and see if they also want
to
request them.
Yeah, that's
a
very good idea. Why don't you make that point number 15?
And
list of points there. Maybe I'm too cynical. I think I was talking about what we should do. There's been some talk that the City Hall Sleepout may disband. Of course, that's always been one of the rumors floating around, but now it seems the rumor is... Do you think that's a likely possibility? What's your sense about that?
There's still a hardcore group that are just not ready to give it up. Dan Hopkins and Mad Mike the Wonder Dog and Gideon and Anthony Patanjo, to name four.
What's happened to Sherry Connable and Barbara Riverwoman, the two homeless activists, as they term themselves? Who
That's a good question. Sherry and Barbara have not really been seen around at the kinds of events that I would have expected them to be in the past.
Well, Sherry did show up at the Catherine Byers Monday morning meeting, which has been happening every week or two, where the two council members, Byers and Scott, get together with members of the protest.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently only she and Charlie Phillips made an appearance.
But I have heard rumors that Sherry is trying to organize a group to go over and squat on a piece of land.
Pocono? That's what I heard in a letter from Mike Balderas.
I thought it was, she said to me the bench lands,
mm-hmm.
which is...
she was speaking of the bench lands before.
Part of San Lorenzo Park.
But I think she may be, well, Balderas says she's now talking about the Pocono.
Yeah, and... I don't know. I think it's a reasonable idea to actually physically. Now, of course, that would be camping and not just sleeping.
Right.
Where people would set up campsites and it's a, place that they're living, which I don't have a problem with it as long as it's in the appropriate location.
The problem with that approach, the problem with that approach is that when you set up a campground, they can remove it in one sweep.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have no more camping equipment, and what, are you going to come back and just lie down there without camping equipment, or are you just going to give it up, or are you going to fight it in court? I mean, it becomes a sort of a one-swoop deal. Maybe you can get some publicity on it.
Well, it does sound like if a group of homeless people did go over and take over a piece of public land, or even private land with permission of the owner, that it would be more confrontations with the law, and that would be inevitable, and what the result of that would be may be no different from what's happened to City Hall with the City Hall Sleepers protest.
And also, you wouldn't be able to come back, because I suspect that, it would be misdemeanor trespass, I believe, on that property, or maybe not. Possibly so. I believe Andrews Corp, our Riverwoman's son, did a similar protest on UCSC in 1988, and he was convicted of misdemeanor trespass.
Just so ridiculous. I mean, here we had the Coral Street Open Air Shelter, which was a third of an acre, and we've got, Santa Cruz has green belt land all over the place, the Poganuc is huge. The University of California property is the largest University of California campus in the whole UC system. There's land all over that we can't find another third of an acre somewhere. I just do not believe city council when they say, "Oh, we just can't find a site."
Mm-hmm. I don't think we really need to even waste our breath on city council and its hypocrisy and lack of political will here. But what we need, of course, are political tactics or activist tactics that will force the city council to deal with the issue. And I think the next step, since we're in the midst of the tourist season, is the one I've always proposed, which is taking the matter downtown, taking it all downtown. And that could begin with a homeless table during the day. But really, I think it should involve some creative guerrilla tactics around upcoming festivals. I think the same homeless activists who are currently spending their time in City Hall, if the City Hall protest fails, or if people decide they want to go some other route, those folks should rest up, and then they should focus their energies on particular periods of time to embarrass the city, high-profile confrontations that are legal, but embarrassing for the city in the upcoming festivals. The July 4th festival is an obvious example. You're looking at something very industrious.
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking that our listeners, some other people might be members of the press like I am, and that they might want to also come and interview you in jail. And if they wanted to do that, the person of contact is Eileen Hirst. That's H-I-R-S-T. She's the chief of staff. And her number is area code 415-522-8000. And you could call and make arrangements, and provided that you're willing, Robert, to be interviewed.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, so.
I know I'm special, but...
You are definitely quite special, thank you.
But I'm not so special that it wouldn't be a good idea to have other journalists come and conduct interviews with you as well.
Okay. What was your experience in getting into the jail? I guess you've recorded it for posterity, but how many hours of work did it take you to get in here?
Oh, probably about an hour and a half on the phone, being shuttled from one place to another. And then when I came in, there was probably about a half hour processing time where they had to examine everything I had brought in. They went through all my bags, and they took my driver's license and gave me this instead, which is a...
Oh, you have a little visitor
my
pass.
My visitor pass, yeah.
Maybe I could, as I said, we're thinking of switching clothes and passes.
Yeah.
Slip outside.
Too bad I didn't wear my bathrobe in.
That's true. Your bathrobe might have been, that might have passed the muster for Becky Johnson, reporter at large.
It's one of the things I said on your show, which is bathrobes appear as broadsides from jail. So that I'm not wearing a bathrobe, but then I didn't know the dress code was so strict when I hired on.
I see. Yes, well, I do try to keep a high standard on my show, and I hope you remember that.
Always setting those fashion trends.
Well, I think the question of the next step in Santa Cruz is really an important one, and it looks like you may want to appeal down there to a new group of people. We've already, been through, you can either go, to directly to the homeless people themselves as some kind of new gimmick.
Well, how about that 800-name petition that the police confiscated with people's names and addresses and phone numbers who...
You can always, of course, go through the old phone list,
which,
and that's useful. But
Judge Stevens refused to return, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, and David Bouvet made a very specific request for a return of blankets, sleeping bags, literature, and petitions.
And what happened to that?
And Judge Stevens says, "I'm not going to do that."
Really? So is it being held in evidence, or what is it being held as? Is it garbage? I mean, what's the story?
Apparently, except for those items that people have a receipt for. And you know, at that fateful day, I think it was, what, June 2nd, when Sergeant Clark came through and cleaned out virtually everything, confiscated virtually everything at the...
Count is clear, so apparently they don't think I'm at large.
Oh,
I can slip out
count
with
is
you.
Clear, huh?
There's still a shot of time. I could hide in your dress, but we could share that dress. It would, of course, be scratched.
Kind of a short skirt here,
it's
Robert.
A short one. Yeah,
I don't think your workout campaign has slimmed you down quite that much yet.
I suppose not.
I'd have better luck hiding in your beard.
That's the other way around. That wouldn't work too well. You might come into my... we could maybe smuggle you into the pod that way. We're trying to find ways for Becky to, should we say, get more intimate interviews with other inmates here, which is, of course, problematic. So, yeah, apparently the court system locally, not only does it suck big time, but apparently attorneys seem unwilling to give the City Hall sleepers any financial support. Kate's having trouble getting Coburn to do anything. Growlin' Greg, as I call him. There's also the... let's get another thing that's clear.
Everybody's still here, huh?
Yeah, everybody. No one has, unfortunately, made a break. Apparently, very few people have ever escaped from this pot. Frank, one of the fellows who you spoke with briefly, the guy with all the muscles, and the big smile, and so...
The tattoos around the neck?
Yeah, that's one.
Okay, that's what I missed the muscle somewhere.
He escaped from this, not from this pod, but from 850 Bryant. Claims to have been the last prisoner to escape 10 years ago. Whether this is apocryphal or not, I don't know. But that is his allegation. You know, it's...
Attention to the facility. The count is clear. The count is
kind
clear.
Of a redundancy here,
and,
huh?
They're making it quite clear that the count is clear in the facility.
I guess it's short attention span guards.
One hopes that, you know, another thing we could think about doing in the future is getting some more celebrated personages to get involved with this, like Ramona Africa, like famous media figures. There was, in fact, Dave Lippmann, the singer, was going to give a benefit tomorrow, but apparently that was... That one fell by the wayside because the organizers involved in that quite get it together.
Why, we're breaking the rules left and right.
To rent the right, look at the rules.
No objects on tables. This table cluttered with
them. We should mention that too. That's in this interview room here, through which you can see, they can see into it. We can't really see out of it too well. You can see the shadowy figures of prisoners cleaning up there.
Entertaining all the rest of your pod mates
here.
Yes,
we're trying to... And Becky is wearing a rather short skirt and has been occasionally flipping her skirt up to the amusement of the cell. Actually, no, she hasn't been doing that. It's a little joke there, folks. I have been, I have to confess it, touching Becky's hand on occasion and, trying to express...
Well, we did number six. Sit across from the person you are visiting. Well, we got one out of eight.
One out of eight, right. So we're successfully engaging in civil disobedience inside the California Correctional Prison System. This is really kind of an impressive situation. It's actually a sad thing, but if you violate these minor rules, you can actually serve more time, even though these things would not be crimes anywhere else. Here and at City Hall in Santa Cruz, a violation of seemingly innocuous rules will get you jail time. Not the visitors, but the inmates, the boys in orange. The orange men, as we call ourselves.
Spoken like a bagel bad man.
The bagel bad man that I am. Bathrobes Pierre, the bagel bad man. So I would encourage everyone out there to... What can you do? You can't really help me much. I mean, I will probably be back in town before you even want to see me. Depending on who you are. It's only 4 weeks until my sentence is up. Today's the 28th and the 27th of July, which really is, 29 days away, something like that. I guess that's about 4 weeks, 4 weeks and a day. I'll be presumably released, that's what I'm told, and possibly a week or two before that, who knows. So my case isn't so important. What's really important is the situation for people who are outdoors in Santa Cruz at the time. And that's a lot of people, and the issue has been mentioned so many times. Any ideas on this one, Becky? I feel just it's completely a great sort of sad cloud.
You know, I had this, well, I'm not going to cheer you up with this at all, I'm afraid.
No, depressing but, story, just what I need for
it. Right. Well, when I was speaking to Stephen DiCenzo, the cartoonist for the Metro.
The megalomaniac lunatic.
He had...
parades his bigotry out for all to see.
Yeah, after he really had one disparaging comment after another about homeless people. And
you failed again to make a tape of that that interview, Becky. I mean, you're slipping on this.
Yeah, well...
You know, free radio people are notorious for recording people's stuff and using it in an effective public manner later, so I'm not going to expect you to really move on that issue.
Yeah, well, I'm a newbie.
Indeed.
At free radio. I haven't quite learned all the ropes yet.
Apparently not.
But after, you know, I talked about a homeless campground or, well, basically he was against any facilities or anything at all for homeless people because it he felt it would encourage homeless people to come here and homeless people to stay here. And finally, in frustration, I said, well, what are you recommending? You know, round them up in trucks and ship them out of here? And he says, I don't care. That'd be fine, you know.
Really?
I'd like to switch topics here before we get back to the panhandling thing.
Right.
Tell us about Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. What is the show about, and what's the focus of the show?
Well, that's a twice-weekly radio show that I do that you have taken over while I've been gone. And I guess with the able help of Mike Balderas and perhaps Pat Ring and others, I'm concerned with the same things that we're talking about now, issues of civil rights, sometimes issues of police abuse, sometimes issues of the drug war. It's sort of a series of pet interests I have. And the Broadsides, of course, is a, you know, Broadsides is a, it used to be a pamphlet or flyer. That's what a Broadsides was called. Also, you would fire a ship broadside if you wanted to do maximum fire damage.